Those on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome. Oh, there we go. Oh, hey.
Sound check.
Yep, sound check. Hey, you've found Cooking Like a Pro. This is Chef Cal with my beautiful Mrs. Chef, Krista, sitting across the table from me. And
checking.
Oh, Happy New Year.
Can't hear me.
Happy New Year. Boy, it has been, it's been quite a year. I mean, we had several shows that were pre-recorded or, you know, just ran again simply because the day before Christmas, the day before, you know, New Year's.
It was Christmas Day and New Year's Day.
So anyway, sorry we're not that dedicated yet, but you know, but hey, you were in our thoughts and in our prayers. So Happy New Year, and I'm glad you're here with Cooking Like a Pro. Again, this is KCNR 1460 AM radio. You've found us. 1460 AM, also 96.5 FM. Sometimes FM comes in a little bit better depending on where you're at. And you can give us a call down here at 530-605-4567 if you have any cooking questions. Again, that number, 530-605-4567. And we actually do have a couple questions that we were sent in, so we will get to those as well. But, you know, I just, this is on my heart, and it's just because, for one, it's never that I can recall in my lifetime been this late, but it's crab season, and crab season is finally here. Now, I'm a person that our family would go out and we would catch our own crabs, drop the crab nets, go out back a little bit later, go out and pick them up. But it's just good. It is finally here, and I think that now they opened it up in stages. So they start up in the California coastline, real close to right in Oregon. And I think that's like the Crescent City catch.
Yeah, Oregon opened first.
And then they'll go down to the Eureka catch, and then down to, then or section, I guess you should say. And then like kind of that Fort Bragg area will open up. Then it goes down to, let's see, Monterey. San Francisco, Monterey, and Morro Bay. Yeah.
Six different locations. I think they were opening 3 through 6.
Yeah, and they
and
start.
And then coming back up to 1 and 2.
Yeah, so, you know,
for commercial fishing.
As far as the commercially out there fishing for it, so you can go to the store and pay too much for it. You know, everything is always going to be more expensive when it first comes out and when it first hits that season. So I'm not sure. I've seen some different prices on crab, but I think you generally, you know, it drops down into the $6 or $7 area, but now we're well into the lower teens. Anyway, hey, it's back, and you know, remember when we're talking about shellfish, we always want to go with shellfish that comes from the coldest water. So if you don't remember anything else, remember that. Whatever you're ordering, whatever you're purchasing, rather, ask where it came from, and you want it to come from cold water. Cold water is going to produce by far the highest quality fish.
Now, where do you get crab? I mean, do you get it at a normal grocery store? Do you go to a special shop?
When it's in season, I mean, you can get it just about anywhere. I know that they have a specialty place here in town. It used to be called Buzz's Crab Shack, so there's that, if you know of that location.
Now it's R&R.
Yeah, and then there's a variety of other ones. You can get it at, you know, the holiday markets and the Safeways and the different markets we have here. But see, I hesitate to say that simply because I just got back from Tennessee a couple of weeks back, and, you know, I did not see a single store or gas station that I recognize the name. Okay, so you get out of California, you don't see Safeways, and you don't see, you know, Chevron stations. And I know they may be around, but I was in Knoxville, and in all of my travels, I didn't.
Well, they don't have a lot of seafood middle of the country because they're not coastal. You know, typically your seafood is going to be more of a coastal type thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Unless it's trucked and shipped and flown and iced.
You know, I also didn't see a sushi restaurant, but the reality is that you can get, you know, you can get bluefin tuna next day from Japan if you want. You know, with the way that things are, you know, distributed and the way you can mail order things that come packed in dry ice. And yeah, you know, another thing they'd never heard of Dungeness crab. And my son-in-law is actually a chef. He'd never heard of Dungeness crab. They'd never heard of tri-tip. That's strictly a California thing. It's branched out. You'll start seeing it in different places. And also abalone. So it was interesting. But then again, I got plenty of grits. I got this butter baked bread that I literally could feel my arteries hardening while I ate it. It was so delicious.
Do they bake it in butter?
Yeah, the butter goes in the pan. You whip up the. We'll have to put that one on the website. Put that on the website after I played with it a little bit, because he cooked it for me, and then he sent me home with the recipe. But
anyway, back to crab. Do you okay? So a lobster you cook live typically. Typically, right? Crab, is that a live cook, or is that something you buy cooked? Do you cook it yourself? How do you do it?
Yeah, you buy it already cooked, and it is alive when they cook it. Lobsters, no. Lobster, if you get a lobster out of a lobster tank, a fresh lobster, you can do it that way. You know, you want to, you know, kill it immediately by putting a knife right towards the back of the head behind the eyes. You know, you don't want to suffer. I mean, you can throw a lobster in boiling water, and you can hear it scream. You know, they make this really high-pitched sound when they're in there. So I prefer to – no, I'm talking about, like, you know, lobster tails or things. But if you really want lobster cooked alive, then that's really more of an East Coast thing. You know, they do the lobster over there on the East Coast. Their lobster is completely different than ours. You know, lobster, like fresh Maine lobster. And when I used to get Maine lobster, it did come alive. It was still, and this was decades ago, they pack it in seaweed. And they just keep it at a cooler temperature, and they're fine when they get here. Typically, you don't want to eat seafood. You don't want to purchase some of the mollusks. Now, we're talking about crustaceans, right? Crustacean, multi-segmented animals. You know, a lobster has a bunch of different shells, pieces to it. So does a crab. But when you get into a mollusk, which is either one shell or two shells being oysters, clams, scallops, one shell being abalone, snails, for escargot or something. So there's a difference there. But those, you don't ever cook them if they're not alive. If they're dead, you throw them out. I mean, and a good way to tell is if the shell opens up. If you see clams in the store and the shells are starting to open, you don't want to get them or tap on them. They might be breathing, but you could tap on them. If they close, then they're still alive. But if they're dead, you definitely don't want to do it, because with those kind of shellfishes, there's a lot of bacteria that can grow in there. And I've got horror stories that I'm not going to go into, but especially if they come from warmer water, like Gulf of Mexico, or what are they? I guess they want to call it Gulf of America now. I don't know. I just seen that in the news. I'm not sure if that's gonna change or not.
Now, who cooks the crab? Is it the store that cooks it? Yeah. Does it come cooked?
No. Well, not the general store like, you know, your supermarket. No. But the old Buzz's crab, you mentioned the R&R, they cook it there.
Or if you're down at Fisherman's Wharf, like in San Francisco, so you'll buy a cooked crab.
Yeah. Would they just drop it right in a big pot of boiling water? Straight in the pot, and they let it go until it's, you know, until it's cooked. And they don't take that long, you know, because the shell's very thin, and they actually cook fairly quickly. But we're right up against a break here. But I did want to mention something. You know, I've seen this. Now, this is another one of those things that you can't believe everything you read on the Internet, okay? I got to preface by saying that. But this lady wrote a cookbook on eating your Christmas tree.
Yes.
Yeah. And basically using the needles like you would use rosemary. So maybe in a marinade, or maybe, you know, I could see something like, maybe use them for smoking, putting them in with your chips if you want to get that kind of a pine, you know, flavor, kind of like doing cedar plank salmon. But I don't know. I'm not sure what else you eat, you know.
Well, it's mostly, I think, used for smoking. you know, using the wood for smoking, cooking outside. And yeah, you can use the needles. Depends upon the tree. You have to research each and every tree. Also, you do not want to get it from like a tree lot or something because it could be sprayed.
This is true.
So maybe a real tree that you cut down in the woods.
Yeah. So if you're going to eat your Christmas tree, folks, we recommend that it is organic. Okay?
From the woods.
For the Christmas tree should be organic. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in just a moment. Again, Cooking Like a Pro here on 1400 AM.
Indulge in an unforgettable evening at Turtle Bay's Chocolate After Dark. Join us on Friday, February 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. and enjoy delicious chocolate treats, fine local wines, and a fun night out at Turtle Bay Museum. Perfect for date night or a special treat for you and your friends. This 21 and older event is too sweet to miss and sure to sell out. Chocolate After Dark at Turtle Bay Museum, Friday, February 7th. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas. But our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer, all winter without them.
Welcome back, welcome back. Hey, you know, we had John Denver bring us back into this segment here. But we wanted to talk a little bit about organics. And there's a couple of things that I think that, you know, I've mentioned in the past, though, but, you know, we are what you eat. And the other kind of adage I'd use is garbage in, garbage out. So, you know, when we start to think about, you know, healthier foods as we do towards the beginning of the year, going with the organics, and you have to expect them to be a little bit more expensive because, you know, instead of using, fertilizers and pesticides, they have to come up with, you know, alternative ways of being able to, make sure that, you know, the bugs aren't going to get them. One of the things is they'll put, aphids in there and they'll eat them at times, but sometimes
organics actually taste better. I actually experienced this a couple weeks ago. I never buy organic lettuce usually just because it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. But I was at Holiday Market and they pretty much have only organic and they had this beautiful green leaf lettuce. It was one of the best lettuce I have had in years because lettuce does not, I mean, honestly, vegetables do not taste the way that they tasted to me when I was a kid. They taste totally different now.
Well, yeah, but I think they were probably coming out of somebody's, you know, farm or out of maybe the neighbor's garden.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's different. Yeah. What we are getting now in your traditional grocery stores, they don't taste the same. So organic can lean you back towards that farm-raised flavor.
You know, and they're not good for you. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's coming out that, you know, whether it's, you know, a cucumber that's grown, you know, on a vine does not come off the vine shiny. Okay, something's been put on that. a wax coating, some sort of a plastic, but it's been coated with something. So, you know, that's an additive right there. And a lot of these things, especially with the soil that we have, a lot of serious health concerns, you know, from, you know, hormone disruptors to cancers. I mean, you really just want to buy the best, highest quality. And around here, one of the places to get really one of the highest quality places, highest quality products, excuse me, is going to be at the farmer's market. And you said that, They're open now already?
They are not already. They're staying open. They're going year round. They used to shut down in the winter. Now they're staying open year round.
All right. So you said they changed the time. So it's
I think they open at 8:30.
So 8:30 on Saturdays. That's behind the City Hall, Taj Mahal over there, right off of Cypress. Go down there and get the product, you know, and talk to the people. I don't just go and buy something when I go there. I talk to them. Okay, how was it raised? You know, where did the water come from? That's something that's, I mean, is it well water or is it water that's coming out of the hose? You used to be able to drink water out of the hose. I don't know that I would do it anymore.
Well water, if you have good hose.
Well water, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just talking about, you know, some of the water, you know, that comes from in a metropolitan area. It's got so much chlorine, you feel like you don't have to, you know, brush your teeth when you're done, or fluoride, I guess. But, yeah, just really look for the highest quality. You know, and when it comes to herbs, you can adjust flavors so much with fresh herbs. And herbs you can grow year-round in your house. You know, we got rosemary. We got basil. You know, our baylor tree is fine. It's like 6 feet tall, so there's enough, you know, bay leaves to, you know, flavor a couple swimming pools.
Well, I think, too, we need to pay attention to we're supposed to be eating what's around us locally. Our bodies are supposed to adapt to what we can eat in our season, in our location, and when we ship a lot of these foods in from other locations, they're not necessarily the best for our body because it's not from our environment. And you're going to get totally different food right now at the farmer's market, like cabbage. A lot of the, sulfuric type vegetables are what's out right
broccoli,
now.
Broccoli, cauliflower, turnips.
So you're not going to be getting the spring vegetables. You're going to be getting the winter vegetables, and your body's going to be craving that.
And all those, again, they're going to be your root vegetables as well, things that are protected. They're grown underneath the ground. I remember a good story with this would be a book that I read. It was back when they had the WWJD, What Would Jesus Do thing. It was kind of came out big. A guy wrote a book, and it was WWJE, What Would Jesus Eat? And it was a fascinating book because it was all about eating a Mediterranean diet. If you think 2,000 years ago, you know, you're in a Mediterranean area, what do you have? You've got fish, fresh fish, that's, you know, grown in water that's, you know, as pure as the wind-driven snow. You've got, you know, animals that are grazing on natural product. You've got wheat.
Olive oil.
Wheat that you're grinding yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, and then vegetables that you grow and stuff. So that's kind of, you know, I believe, you know, that this is the trend. It's going to continue to go this way. Eating healthy is not a fad. People are figuring out that, you know, we're dropping dead because of what we're putting in our body. And they're starting to come around to that. And I really see a lot of change coming up. And when you look at things like we talked about, you know, food dyes and things that are just really aren't good for you. You know, when you look at a package of something and there's, you know, 30, 40 ingredients. And I've said this numerous times, if I can't pronounce it or if I don't know what it is and I don't know why it's in there, I just don't buy it.
But another thing, too, just because it says it's organic isn't necessarily still good for you. There's a lot of these packaged items, they'll say organic and they'll have organic ingredients in it, but there's a bunch of other ingredients mixed in that just aren't good to begin with because, you know, there's lots of sugar and oils and fats that don't need to be there.
And, you know, and also packaging. You know, I mean, when something is wrapped in plastic, some of that plastic is affecting that product. Not that you can see with your naked eye, but I can tell you that they are. They say we're eating a credit card worth of plastic every 3 months because of the plastic we have. So maybe going and purchasing things in an open air market, like a farmer's market, or in a place where they sell it, where things are like in big, bushel baskets, or, you know, where you can grab stuff that's not already pre-wrapped. You know, that would be something that would help. But, I know for us, you can just add a few extra elements of freshness, It's kind of like taking a salad and adding maybe some rough chopped cilantro or maybe some rough chopped, mint. You know, something's going to brighten it up. Something's going to add some color. Because, you know, you mentioned lettuce earlier, and lettuce is 90% water. Take a head of iceberg lettuce coming up this summer when we're here up in Redding, California, when it gets up to around 115. Just take that head of lettuce and put it outside and see what it looks like the next day. I mean, there's nothing there. You know, a little bit of fiber, but I mean, really, it's all water. And that's really, once you understand that, that's one way to really refresh your items. And we do that a lot. I mean, you know, to explain to what you do with the green onions. We buy one bunch of green onions, and we are good for months because Krista keeps growing them.
Yeah, you just put them in a little glass of water a little bit down there in the roots, and they'll keep going off. I mean, not months. You'll get 2-3 more, what do you call them?
Cycles. Of
cycles,
some sort,
yeah. They'll grow a couple, 3 times more, and then they will die. They'll be done. Yeah. But they will keep growing. Sometimes even if you leave them in the refrigerator, they will keep growing. If you leave them for a week, they'll be longer.
Yeah, but take them out of the plastic. You know, one of the things I always did was I wrap things in damp paper towels, and that just continues to keep them moist. It keeps them protected from the air as well.
But lets them breathe a little bit so they're not completely, yeah, you know, closed off.
Yeah, and I wanted to get to these questions that John had reached out and sent these to me. So John, thank you for the questions. One was, how do I take the gas out of beans? You know, because beans have these natural properties that will cause, you know, gas, and you really, not only is there gas, and then you're also talking about irritating your intestines. And you're also, the digestive process is a little rougher. So there's really the main two ways to do it is soak your beans, which overnight, you can change the water out a couple times, but that will also dramatically decrease the
cooking time.
Yeah. I mean, we've always soaked our beans. Like, what's soup tomorrow? Wiping in ham. Okay. Soak 20 pounds of beans before you leave tonight. You know, that kind of thing.
And they need to be rinsed.
Yeah, rinsed, and, you know, I always get something that they call triple cleaned, especially if I'm doing refried beans, if I'm using, you know, if I want to make some frijoles out of pinto beans. You want something that's really gone, because, you know, they're grown in, you know, I mean, it's pretty easy to get rocks in them.
I was just saying, I always remember growing up, the first thing was, like, pick through your beans and look for rocks. That was number one every single time.
Yeah, I imagine they've, I'm sure that they've increased the technology of getting rocks out of beans now because you don't see as much. But I remember back in the day all the time, and you don't want to bite into a bean. I mean, you know, there goes your tooth. And the other question that we had was, I'm having trouble peeling my eggs. And what the person who reached out to me, John, said that he cooks them and then cools them down and peels them the next day. The main thing about peeling eggs correctly, there's two main components. One is that they're cooked correctly, and I'll just briefly walk through that process. And the second thing is you peel them while they're still warm, and you peel them under running water, just lightly running water. So what you take your eggs, you cook them, you get a pot of boiling water, pretty good sized pot of boiling water, you know, maybe 4 times the size of the volume of your eggs. Get it up to a boil, shut it off. Carefully put you don't want the water to agitate the eggs, because the eggs bounce around, they're going to break. So we're going to take a slotted spoon or some sort of a vessel and carefully put these eggs into the water once the fire's been turned off and it's not at a rolling boil. Then once the eggs get in there, you turn it back on. The outside of those eggs, inside those eggs, the outer area will cook because of the heat, and then they're not going to break. And even if they do, they're not going to lose any of the white. So that would be the first part of the process. And then from there, you just cook them they come back to a boil, 13 minutes, pull them out, cool them down, they're done. When you cool them down, I put them in, you know, a little bit of ice water to kind of get them to a point where you can handle them. And then I drizzle turn your water on in your faucet and just have it kind of drizzling, and then just crack that egg, and then I usually just roll the egg on a cloth towel, And then I just hold that egg underneath the running water and just pull the shell off. And once the water gets under the shell, because remember, you got the egg, you got the shell, and in between those two things, you've got a membrane. And you want the water to get under the membrane, and then it comes right off. So thanks, John. Appreciate you calling in. And
real quick, we forgot with the smoking beans, the additive we added to the water.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can also add some baking soda.
Or apple cider vinegar. Yeah. Those both help with the digestion.
I've never done the apple cider, but yes, the little bit of bacon. And really, you're talking about maybe a teaspoon for every pound of beans, and you're all set. So back for a quick break. Cooking Like a Pro, you have found us on KCNR. We will be back in just a moment.
Beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, chicken, turkeys, rabbits, you name it! God damn it!
Happy New Year, Redding, from your friends at Black Bear Diner, reminding you that if you're looking for more food, more fun, and more family, this is the place to be. You can count on a warm atmosphere and deliciously fresh home-style food. It's the perfect spot for every generation, with something for everyone. Come for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Redding.
Black Bear Diner.
This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
To be an Oscar Mayer wiener, that is what I truly like to be. Cause if I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
There you go. Oscar Mayer wiener. I think we all remember that jingle.
I do.
Everyone remembers that jingle. So we're going to talk a little bit about, well, I don't talk about all about hot dogs because there's only so much you can talk about, but
like Costco $1.50 combo.
Oh yeah, they'll go out of business if they ever change that one. That's a big one.
I'll be out there protesting.
I'm sure you will. Ben, our engineer, lives on Costco dogs. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
There you go.
It's a sign of patriotism.
Personally, I can't stand hot dogs.
All right. Well, that's because maybe you know what's going in there. That's kind of like, well, when people know what goes in the sausage. But anyway, I did want to thank Charlie's Tap House for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast, located down in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center, just 10 minutes south of town. And they have got some really cool things going on now. So if you have a child, or you know of a child that has a birthday coming up or something that needs to be celebrated with youngsters, they've got a new segments area that they have now, which is right next to Charlie's. And they have a bouncy house. They've got an arcade in there. It's actually called Charlie's Adventure Room. Now you need to call down there to, or go online and get a hold of them so you can, make a reservation. You need that. But they have a couple different packages. But I like those. A package one, and it includes pizza and soda and stuff. But package two, all the kids get to make their own pizza. So if you're looking for something to keep kids
entertained.
I remember owning restaurants, and I can't tell you how many times I would take a kid that was being a little restless, and I just say, hey, I would just say, hey, you want to go back in the kitchen, see how a kitchen runs? And I'd bring him back, and he could stand there and watch because they're all the bright lights, and it's busy, and everyone's running around. And they just loved it. So kids like making pizza. They like eating pizza. So you can go down to Charlou's and visit Charlou's Adventure Room. I know they got an arcade in there and the bouncy houses. Again, pizza and soda. And just it's an exciting new facility and a great, great pizza experience. So if you're looking for something, it's a great place to go. So go down there, tell them Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef Krista sent you, and take a look at it. Maybe next time you're in the area, just tell me you want to go in and take it. But, I mean, it really, really is nice. And you're looking for, you know, just a nice place to have a kid's birthday. You kind of run out of options pretty quickly in this town or just about anywhere. But so thank you for Charlou's again for sponsoring us here, and you can go to charlous.com again, charlous.com. And I was back in Tennessee in Knoxville, and my daughter gave me my first grandbaby, my first granddaughter, Juniper Roxanne Hodge. What a beautiful name. What a beautiful little girl. I was able to hold her about maybe 45 minutes or so after she was brought into the world, and it's just wonderful. And but they're really Vikings fans, okay? They are, like, really Vikings
fans.
Did
you ever find out why people in Tennessee are Minnesota Viking fans?
I don't know if it's everyone in Tennessee or just them.
Or just that family.
Yeah, it could just be them. But I know that what they do is every time during every week during football season, whoever they're playing, they will match their food that they're going to have for their, you know, their tailgate at home.
So if the Vikings are playing the Niners, what would they make?
Well, the clam chowder, you know, I mean, something that would be reminiscent of that area. And so when I was there, they were playing Seattle. And Seattle apparently is famous for a particular hot dog. So that's why we had the hot dog bump coming in. And what they do is they take and they cook off the hot dogs. They bring them up to temp, you know, grill them off, get them nice and flavorful. And then they'll take a hot dog bun, put cream cheese in it, put the hot dog bun on top of the cream cheese, and then top it with sauteed jalapenos.
Did you have one?
I did not, because I was flying out.
Oh, you were flying out the day of the game.
I was flying out the morning of the game, but I did call back and talk to my wife's husband and his dad, and he said he'll never have a hot dog any other way. So I did buy a couple jalapenos, so I'm getting ready, folks. I'll let you know. But you know,
not know. Canned jalapenos. They're actual fresh, like
fresh jalapenos, just and sautéed.
Really?
Yes, sautéed fresh jalapenos. You know, well, you know, people, jalapenos get a little bit of a bad rap because of people that really don't like things that are spicy. But one of the things you want to do with your peppers, and because you've got that capsaicin in there, which is that hot, the active ingredient that makes them hot, and that's in both the shoulders and the seeds. So when you cut a pepper in half, you take the shoulders out of it, that's that white membrane, and you take the seeds out, and now all you have is just the true flavor of the fruit. You know, the fruit of the pepper, so now you're just tasting it. Whether it's a bell pepper and it's zero heat, or a jalapeno and it's maybe 4, you know, on a scale 1 to 10. I mean, depending, it could be 3. Cause, you know, they've gotten peppers now, they're so hot, they're just painful. I watch people eat them and it's like, I see no.
And they're registered.
No, zero value.
In Scoville units.
Well, there's a variety. They do 1 to 10. They do Scoville units as well. But the Scoville is a little confusing because it reminds me of, like, being in Italy and, you know, buying a soda and it was, you know, 65,000 lei. You know, they just, you know, you know, when you get into Scoville units, you go up into the millions. So it's kind of hard. 1 through 10, I can understand. Okay, when you tell me something is 6.5 million Scoville units, I know it's going to give me blisters on my lips. So, but you know, we talked about the hot dogs, and then we would come up with someone had mentioned bologna as well, and it's all the same thing. It just depends on how big the casing is The casing is the outside exterior that you pipe into it. The same thing with making sausage. They'll, you know, making hot dogs, the same thing as making sausage, except, you know, one's pork that's ground quite a bit more. And, you know, on a hot dog, they pretty much grind up, you know, the ears, the lips, the, I don't know, whether everything pretty much is in there, you know. And so that's probably why you maybe don't care for them.
I don't like the texture. I don't like the skin.
Like skin? Well, you skin them, you know. Well, again, you may have had hot dogs that have a synthetic casing, and majority of them do. Majority of things that are wrapped like that, whether it's salami, whether it's a bologna, whether it's a sausage or a hot dog, that outside casing is a synthetic product that they make. What I always use when I made my, especially if I made like a seafood sausage or something like that, is I would use, fresh intestines. You know, you can buy casing that's a natural casing, and it's much more tender. You don't even notice that it's there.
Now, what is salami? They always had that powdery, tough outer coating on that. What do they use for that?
That's the salami doing what it's supposed to do, which is growing. You know, that's the, you know, when you let something dry hang for a long time, it's going to get that fungi that's grown on the outside. But, you know, that's...
So it's not flour? I always thought it was flour.
I don't know.
I would have no idea.
I don't know exactly what they dust everything on, because I never made salami other than just to dry it and eat it fairly quickly. You know, you can get salamis that are, you know, decades old, you know, that have been hanging for a while. But I wanted to touch on the thing with the tailgate food. And we have, you know, playoffs coming up. We got, you know, I'm excited about all this because I was in Tennessee and everyone's into college football. But we got college football going on. Now the NFL playoffs are going on. So we got a lot of different foods that people like for, you know, just kind of traditional, you know, foods you can snack, finger foods, appetizers, you know, that you can have during a game or during halftime. And I, you know, I'd love to hear from you folks. If you have any, items you can, you know, that you really like to do, ideas you want to share, please, you can give us a call down here. Or one of the easier ways to get a hold of us is just go to, Cooking Like a Pro podcast, right?
Podcast, yes. Yeah. .net.
Cooking Like a Pro podcast.net. You can tell who the tech person is and out of this group. But yeah, just, you know, cause I'd love to hear it. There's a variety of things that are out there. Some things are really unique. I used to go down to the Candlestick with my family and, my brothers and stuff. And boy, we would have tailgates that the tailgate party was better than the game.
So what do you have?
That was back when Montana was playing.
What do you cook?
We would do anything and everything. We would be sauteing scampi. We'd be cooking filet. I remember doing lobster. I remember doing buffalo steaks. Just anything kind of different. I've done a lot of things off a tailgate on a truck before. I actually did a 7-course gourmet meal off the back of my pickup truck that was, I think they paid $5,000 for it. It was for an auction a long time ago. But it was, I did it. It was down in Napa. It was out in a remote place where I didn't have access to any cooking facilities. And it was really fun. It was really fun. But you know, you're up against what you have. And when you know you're cooking off a tailgate, you better have all the right products.
But you're cooking at home, you're not really cooking off of a tailgate. You've got your barbecue available. You got your stove available. What do you make?
Wings, nachos, queso, dip, things that you can, you know, eat while you're watching. Like for me, wings, you know, need to be in the bone, but there's a lot of different things. You know, roasted nuts, you know, I mean, spice nuts or something, you know, you can spice popcorn. That's one of the things, you know, that I see quite a bit, but you know, it's kind of like whatever everybody wants, but usually again, finger food, something you can eat, you know, not make too big of a mess.
So how do you make Candlestick fries?
Candlestick fries are garlic fries, and the best way to do those is you cook your garlic ahead of time, and it's roasted. Okay, so just starting to turn color, just barely turning amber. Okay, and then once you get it there, take it off, cool it down. You're going to go and chop that up in a little Robocooler, little blender, little mixer, and then you're going to add oil and parsley to that. And then once your fries come out, immediately come out of the fryer, nice and crisp, you throw them in a bowl, throw in a spoonful of this roasted garlic mix, a little bit of salt and a little bit of Parmesan cheese, and toss them, and boom, candlestick fries. Can't go wrong.
Well, get your fries. I love the fries from Trader Joe's. Oh. I think they air fry the best because we don't deep fry our fries at home. We air fry them.
Yeah, well, you know, you do a deep fryer, it's fine, but you better have a good hood system, because if not, your whole house is going to smell like a deep fryer. So I love deep fried food, and it's very healthy to eat. We can talk a little more about that at a different time, but it has to be done right in order to do that. So we're going to go ahead and take our last break. We appreciate you tuning in and listening to us here on Cooking Like a Pro, and we'll be back in just a moment.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence. You can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
At Greg's Pump and Well Service, we believe integrity is the cornerstone of everything we do. This month, we proudly salute our armed forces and first responders, those who embody true service, dedication, and integrity. When you choose us for your pump and well needs, you're choosing a company that shares those same values. Thank you for your service. Let us serve you with pride. 530-282-5395. Call us at 530-282-5395. License 109-0355.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Cowan. Yeah, that was our French chef Pesson. I don't know what his name is, so from the Little Mermaid. But anyway, he is French. We know that much because he's singing in French. Les poissons, the fishes, the fish.
I think it's Thomas Burke. Maybe?
Is that the name of the...
Le Poisson by Thomas Burke. I don't know if that's the actual name of the guy in the movie.
Well, it's French, and I wanted to talk about French stuff, so that was our lead-in. anyway, not to explain everything that we're doing here behind the mic, but I want to talk a little bit about soups. So this last segment, we're going to talk about soups, just simply because it's something that, you know, when you... It's a great way to use up a lot of different product, but it's just the time of year for soup. Yeah, and you can make a really nice, healthy soup, serve it with maybe some crackers or something on the side, or croutons or whatever the garnish is, maybe some bread. But then it's an easy meal. But you need to make a soup that everybody likes. You know, and when you break it down into the categories, the French would break it down into either cream soups, broth soups, bisque soups, or specialty national soups. Now, cream soup is cream of broccoli, cream of...
Chicken, cream of mushroom, cream of celery.
Keep going, girl. Keep going.
Cream corn.
Cream of asparagus. Yeah, cream of tomato. Cream of carrot. I used to make a cream of carrot and ginger soup. Oh, it's nice. One of the things that when you make these soups is give them a little little something. I mean, if you're going to make a cream of mushroom soup, then put one more unique item in there and just kind of break that down. Okay, what's a mushroom taste like? It gives that earthy, almost like a umami kind of a flavor. Well, that earthy flavor goes great with, when I first think of it, the first thing pops in my head is walnuts. So what if we had some chopped walnuts in with my mushroom, cream of mushroom soup? Or like the carrot soup that we put the ginger in, or corn. Maybe use make a nice corn cream of corn soup, but put some diced green chilies in it. Just kind of think of something to make it unique, something that you know everyone's going to like. But cream soups. That's kind of where that comes from, which is basically a cream sauce that's a little bit thinner that has some sort of vegetable, usually puree.
Let's talk about a cream soup. So you would start with whatever your flavor is going to be, your vegetables. You're going to add your stock, which is usually going to be probably a chicken stock or a vegetable stock.
Yeah.
And then you just tighten it up with cream, right?
Yeah. Well, no, you tighten it up with roux.
Okay.
But you do add milk to it. Okay. Now, they say it's a cream soup, but generally it's going to be milk. Cream is, first off, four times more expensive. And I always like to add a little bit of cream. But if I'm making, you know, 30 or 40 gallons of soup or something at work, I'm not going to use, you know, $100 worth of cream to do it. You know, we would use for the dairy, we'd use milk and maybe a little bit of cream just to kind of give it a little bit of that velvet mouthfeel on your tongue at the end.
So you just want to add the roux straight to the soup, or do you want to cook the roux in with the milk and then add it to the soup?
No, you want to cook. You want to tighten up the soup before you add the dairy to it. And then when you add the dairy, you always want to add it slowly because you don't want it to break. When it's a broken, you can tell that it's separated on top. So you add it slowly while you're whisking. So you take your cream and or milk and bring it up to temperature. Warm it up, not right out of the fridge. Warm it up in another pan. Get it close. And what this is called is tempering. Kind of the same way you would temper chocolate. You want to temper your dairy before you go into this really hot boiling batch of soup.
And you don't want to scald it.
And, you really don't. I mean, you can bring it up to a simmer where it starts to rise and then shut it off, but you don't want to bring it anywhere near, a hard boil.
Yeah, because it's going to scald and it's going to get that skin on it, and you don't want that.
It's going to separate. Yeah, it'll separate in the soup. And then just burr mix it and then adjust it with salt, pepper, whatever it is that you want to go, whatever direction. Maybe, again, come up with a unique spice or maybe you got a fresh herb. You know, you can take a cream of tomato soup and simply add, you know, if you make a pot of soup that's going to be four or six portions and you just add a couple, you know, let's say maybe a half a dozen or eight fresh basil leaves in there. Kind of just chop them up lightly and put them in there. You completely change this soup into something that's going to be, the flavor profile is going to be dramatically increased.
Well, when I make the soup, when I used to make it for the school, we'd make the grilled cheese and tomatoes, one of our top sellers. I would get a regular can of tomato Campbell's tomato soup.
Uh-oh.
Seriously, I would just start with
that.
No, okay. But I wouldn't do the normal water can ratio. I would do a little bit of water, but then I would flavor it with a little bit of chicken base, give it a little flavor, and then I would add milk to it.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect texture.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful recipe, and those kids just love that. I remember once that I made this tomato soup, and I was so proud of it. Fresh tomatoes and the kid I had gotten and all this beautiful product and some nice onions, and I make this beautiful soup, and it tasted just like Campbell's soup out of the can. I couldn't believe it. I was crushed, you know. But anyway.
So how would you make the carrot ginger soup that you talked about?
You're going to take your poultry stock. You're going to peel your carrots, chunk them up, whenever you want to chunk them, throw them in there, let them go till they're tender. Then you're going to take your stick blender. We call it a burr mixer. Burr is a French word for
butter. Immersion blender.
Yeah, or immersion blender. And you stick that in there and just go until it's completely pureed. And then you can just gonna go ahead and adjust your seasoning and then slowly add your dairy while you're whisking it. And I would have already put my ginger in as well, use some fresh ginger. Those little tubes of ginger are really good to have.
Those are fantastic.
Those are good to have around because ginger's a pain because it's so fibrous. You know, I mean, if you chop ginger, you just, you know, peel the outside of it. And the key with ginger is you cut it with the back end of the knife. You don't use the sharp end of the knife. You cut it with the back end of the knife because it smashes it. And then you just scrape it off, and then you don't have all those fibers.
Now, I think, too, a lot of people don't know, this is a trick you taught me, is if you want a truly luxurious, creamy soup, is to run it through a strainer and then a chinois.
Yeah.
And that will really get it just really super smooth.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, you know, the vitamins and minerals, things that are in there, if I'm doing something for a fancier, higher-end meal, then, yeah, I'll do that. Other than that, I kind of like all those little pieces in there because, you know, they're flavor as well. Plus, you know, makes it a little more interesting having some kind of texture. And then we go to the broth soups, which are clear soups. Minestrone is probably one of the more famous. But beef and barley, chicken noodle. Anything that's a broth base.
So you don't tighten those with the roux.
No. So you got a cream soups, then you got your broth soups, and then your bisques are always going to be very similar to your cream soup, except your bisques are always going to be seafood. And one thing I always do with the bisque is I get a really nice high-end paprika, and it gives it that, you know, that amber kind of color to it. And it's just beautiful. Kind of like making seafood Newberg. Like if you're making the sauce, the Newberg sauce, it's kind of like that, but the soup would be thinner.
So if somebody calls a soup like a tomato bisque or butternut squash bisque, is that incorrect?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because they're using the word bisque as if it's a pure pureed.
Yeah, like it's a texture type thing.
But, well, you know, there's truth in menu laws, but I mean, how many people even care? I read menus now, and then I have to, you know, I need therapy when I'm done reading most menus because they're just incorrect in the way they describe it. Plus, you know, I'm just one of those people that when I go out, and we don't go out that often, and when I go out and I want to just be waited on, that's when I go out. So we'll go out for a date night. It's the waited on thing that, you know, you're paying for, and it costs too much now. Prices are way, way too high, but that's a different show we can talk about. But, I just drives me nuts when I see something, I read it, I say, that sounds great, and I order it, and when it comes, it is nothing like what I had in my mind. It's nothing like what I envisioned. And I did a lot of that. I used to do all the billboards for Black Bear Diner, and you know, people drive by and they see this big old juicy close up of this burger dripping, you know, melted cheese. And then
it shows up at your table, and you're like,
yeah,
oh, what?
You know, yeah, did I order the same thing? Well, that reminds me. I didn't even mention this back in Tennessee. I officially went to my very, very first Waffle House. And I've never been to one before. I've heard stories. The stories are true. It was fun. So it's a place to do waffles. It's waffles is the main thing that they do there. And then you get all the rest of your stuff. You get your grits on the side. I think you had a choice of potatoes or grits, and then your eggs, and everything's done a little bit different. It was just any way you could ever want a waffle.
So it's different than a pancake house. It's a waffle house. They specialize in waffles.
It's Waffle House. It's open 24 hours. It has, because it's open 24 hours, you get a colorful type of clientele. Because, you know, you get people all walks of life, which is fine and dandy. But it's almost, for me, it was just almost as entertaining. The meal was fine. You know, I had breakfast with my daughter. This is 2 days before she gave birth. But just looking at the people around, and it was fun. It was just home style people, and they were just, and the service was very friendly and loud, and it was, I even got a coffee mug so I could remember that. And I don't want to miss the last soup here because we're going to run up against the end here, but specialty soups. So you got your, specialty soups or national soups. National being things like French onion. Right, egg drop soup would be, you know, from your Pacific Rim area.
New England clam chowder.
New England clam chowder. Well, that would be a regional. Same thing as Boston clam chowder, or you know, some kind of pozole, you know, which would be maybe something you get down in the South, or certainly you'd get in Mexico.
Or like a wedding soup, or
wedding soup,
tortilla soup.
Yeah, so something from Italy. Italy would. Be really probably more of a minestrone, you know, that you'd find, you know.
What about borscht? Isn't that a...
Yeah, that's from Russia. Yeah, it's a beet soup, okay. Beet soup from Russia. It's cool, too. You always add a little cream to it, and it's just, boom! Yeah, it opens right up.
Now, the last one that I want to know is vichyssoise.
Oh, vichyssoise. Yeah, that's a beautiful soup. Yeah, it's apple, celery, and leeks.
And I always thought it had fish in it.
And you also want to put a little bit of curry into it too. So, but we appreciate you folks. We're glad that you're here listening to us.
If you need to hear any of our previous shows, which you do need to hear them, you can look for the Cooking Like a Pro podcast on Apple and Spotify.
There you go. And don't forget, we're at the beginning of a new year, so let's make a difference, right? Take the word random out of the word random acts of kindness. God bless you, and we will see you next time on Cooking Like a Pro. Have a great evening.
This has been KCNR Shasta Redding.
Shasta Regional Medical Center.